A quarter mile from Virtue Lake, the light started to turn purple and soft. The dancing orange fires in the shantytown and the fires from the refinery were reflected, along with the last of the sunset, off the glass windows of the boss's houses on the hill, and off the tall, dominating marquee of the Quickway Market. The crosswind had stopped, and Ryan could smell the Ville, its petro stink, its human stink. They moved on a dead run the last 300 yards. The slave shanties drifted all the way down to the edge of the dry lake, onto a dusty beach. There was no thoroughfare between them, just a narrow winding footpath, down the middle of which a sewage ditch had been hacked. Ryan was fairly certain that Shabazz couldn't have used up all of his nerve gas in the assault. He had counted only 9 grens popping off. The things came in crates of 20, which meant the pirate trader had to have the rest of his supply close at hand, probably hidden somewhere in Virtue Lake. There was no defense against the gas, no antidote to the neurotoxin. Ryan figured that the strong wind blowing at the time of the attack was the only reason everyone in the crew hadn't been killed. It pushed the gas away from the convoy before lethal doses of it could seep into the wags. Trader had come across caches of the stuff before in hardened bunkers. Ryan knew because he'd been with him when the gas grenades were found. Trader always made sure the bunkers were covered back up, real carefully. Handling pre-dark nerve grenades was a risky business. After sitting around for a century, the canisters sometimes leaked, and the chemicals inside often became unstable. If there was a leak or a blowout, you could be dead before you knew it. Trader had said there was some merchandise that should never see the light of day, and that there weren't enough people in Deathlands as it was. On either side of Ryan were walls made of tattered, clear plastic sheeting. He looked into dirt-floored private chambers, so small that a man had to curl up in a ball in order to lie down. There was more than one man curled up in them, too. Piles of workers, in fact, sleeping the sleep of the nearly dead, until the blast of the refinery horn roused them to make their next shift. He didn't know what kept them all here. It wasn't the fence across the road. They could bypass it and light out over the lake as Paste had. Not the guns of the Sekhmen. Though the Baron's thugs were well armed, there weren't enough of them to hold back a mob this size. It wasn't the chains, either, because most of the workers weren't hobbled with manacles. If it wasn't any of those things, then what was it? What made the slaves give up their lives so meekly? Ryan was thinking about this dilemma with one small part of his mind. With the rest, he was searching the jumble of roof lines, the sagging walls, the doorless doorways for potential threats. Even so, he didn't see the small, quick figure step out into the lane behind him.
Hey, you!
Ryan turned and looked down at someone he recognized. It was the young, would-be Punga thief.
You lying bastard! I'll give you some food on the way out. My word on it.
It couldn't be helped. I got no food with me now, either.
My stomach's growling so loud, One-Eye, I can't even sleep. Got any zealies left?
No.
What are you three doing down here anyway? Looking to get yourselves chilled? Don't nobody come down here unless they have no choice.
I got a proposition for you. What's your name, son?
Whoa now. I don't never do that kind of thing. You want sex? Go to a gaudy.
Oh, no, you got it all wrong. I'm talking about a scouting job.
Got nothing to pay me with. Oh, you gonna threaten me?
No. You help us out, and you get this Punga.
That's the blade?
Uh-huh. Now what's your name?
They call me Gaito.
That's Spanish?
Hey, what sort of scouting do you need done? Must be something big or you wouldn't part with your stabber.
We need to find our crew that Zeal took away, and our wags.
What are you gonna do when you find them?
That's our business.
Well, finding them ain't gonna be hard. Not being seen by the Sekhmen, now that's gonna be hard. I gotta say, you don't look like the folks living around here. You look more like road pirates or cold heart mercies. But you know what? You came to the right scout. Far as that big stabber goes, you gotta pay me off when I show you what you wanna see. I can't be hanging around while you do your business, or the Sekhmen will chill me for sure.
Fair enough.
Ryan could see that heads were starting to poke out of doorways, the corners of sheets of plastic being pulled back so furtive eyes could stare out at them. The stink as he stood over the sewage ditch was gut-wrenching.
Lead the way.
Stick close now. The path winds some, and it's hard to find if you lose it. But no Sekhmen ever comes this way.
The kid immediately took off at right angles to the lane they'd been following. The track he took was no wider than a deer trail, and there were obstacles that were hard to see in the failing light. Almost at once, they came upon a broad heap of overturned 55-gallon oil drums that had been thrown out as scrap from the refinery. They were without tops or bottoms, and people were sleeping in them, sometimes two or three. A little farther on, right in the middle of the trail, lay a dead man. He'd been stripped of the skin, his teeth were bared, eyes nothing but whites as they stared blindly up at the first stars of evening. There were muddy boot marks on his pale chest and stomach, where other pedestrians had carelessly trod. It was hard for the one-eyed man to maintain his bearings, what with all the cutbacks and roundabouts the boy was taking. Inside the middle of the shanty town, the press of haphazard structures was so tight that he couldn't see so much as a foot beyond the shacks that surrounded him on all sides. Only the stars overhead told him that they were progressing, if slowly, because of the elaborate route, in the right general direction. The narrow twisting path opened suddenly on a wider patch, sort of a clearing that was maybe 10 by 10, in the middle of which was an oil drum with a rubbish fire burning in it. A half dozen men stood around the drum. They were taking turns cooking big rats, skewered, ass to mouth, on thick metal wires. They hadn't bothered skinning their supper. Once the meal was cooked, they drew back to eat the smoking meat. Ryan sensed their fear as they first caught sight of him, then their hate. They lowered their food. Their hands dropped to the shadows where cudgels had been leaned. Ryan reacted automatically.
Don't think I'll hesitate chilling every last one of you. Nobody's gonna question blaster fire in this shithole of a vill.
No! We're just passing through. Nothing to get twitchy about. These folks mean you guys no harm.
Well, maybe we mean them some harm. Got no entertainment tonight. Gaudy's all shut down.
You don't want to mess with them. They all got blasters.
We can see that. Maybe we'll just take them. And them good boots.
Ryan took one step, wide to the left, giving Poet and Hun, who stood behind him, a clear zone of fire.
They're gonna stick it to old Zeal.
Well, hell. Better get on with it then. And good luck to ya.
Yeah. Pipe a lid, peel up his butt for me.
The workers watched with amusement as Ryan, Poet, and Hun carefully circled them and moved on. Ryan was starting to see how and why the people of Virtue Lake had earned their reputation as chillers and thieves. The Baron had turned them into little more than animals, making them grub through the refuse for rats to eat, forcing them to live in their own stink and filth, working them to death in his refinery. No wonder they killed and robbed whenever the opportunity came their way. Their docile acceptance of Zeal's authority and subjugation still puzzled him. He had been around slaves and near slaves before. In his experience, they were usually broken in spirit, if not in body. How had Zeal broken so many? Not with his outlandish clothes and makeup, not with the terrible nature of the work, or the Sekhmen. Then how? The unanswered question gnawed on the surface of his mind. It itched as he followed after the child. Ahead, above the shacks, he could see the roofline of one of the strip malls. They approached the structure from the backside. Their path skirted the edge of the shanties until they came to a narrow gap in the dwellings.
Where have we stopped?
Come here. Take a look.
What Ryan saw didn't please him. He looked end on at the mall. It was completely roped off with yellow plastic tape. Inside the barrier were half of the convoy's wags. Outside the barrier was a line of armed Sekhmen. He was amazed to see the damage the blast had done. One of the wags was entirely gone. There was a pit in the ground where it had been parked. Beside it, half canted into the hole, were the remains of a transport. All that was left of it were the frame rails and axles and the far side front door. The rest had been sheared away. The row of gaudies had likewise been hammered by the explosion. They were dark and deserted. Nothing moved inside the tape barrier. As far as the workers were concerned, the novelty of the blast had worn off. They no longer stood around staring blankly at the devastation. Instead, they wandered, drinkless, slutless, along the Ville's main road. Although Ryan was confident that the Sekhmen wouldn't risk a volley of gunfire into the parking lot for fear of setting off another explosion, he knew that freeing the wags was going to be tough duty. Then he felt the slightest of tugs at his leg. His right hand swept down and caught the boy trying to lift the panga again.
No, you don't.
Hey! We had a deal!
We still do, Gaido, but we're only halfway there.
Traitor was helpless, chained by the neck to the base of the refinery's interior wall. It was all he could do to tear his gaze from the slowly rotating tank and the long line of leaping blue flames. He forced himself to look elsewhere, to look for a way to save those in his crew who still had a hope in hell of surviving. It was hard for him to concentrate, surrounded by awesome noise and head-spinning stink. In his wide travels, Trader had toured the insides of a few of Deathland's functioning refineries, but none of them had operated on anywhere near this scale. Zeal, it seemed, was trying to make up for the lack of quality with quantity. The refinery's main structure was 3 stories tall. The ceiling, high overhead, was mostly obscured by the sides of towering steel processing and holding tanks, by the series of metal catwalks that stair-stepped them, and by the blue exhaust haze that hung below the rafters. The once polished concrete floor was crazed and chipped, and stained by caustic chemicals. Everywhere Trader looked, the machinery and the pipework was held together with duct tape, rags, and baling wire. Zeal's refinery was falling to pieces in a million places all at once. In a place this large, there were many hundreds of thousands of parts that could fail. And when they eventually did, if they couldn't be replaced, they had to be repaired with whatever was at hand. Accordingly, separated pipe joints and cracked valve casings were turned into great lumpy gnarls of rust that constantly hissed or dripped, or did both. Though the plant had been originally designed to be comp-automated, Trader knew that Skydark's global electromagnetic surge had to have cooked all of its printed circuits, the same way it had cooked every other circuit that wasn't safely tucked away in a deeply buried blast-hardened bunker. In order to make the place functional again, Virtue Lake's new cost survivors had had to disconnect all the useless comp controls and jury-rig manual operation. Sometime thereafter, Trader decided, the refinery's network of conveyor belts had to have fallen apart. There was simply nothing available that was strong enough to replace them, though there was still some evidence that attempts had been made. Tanned animal skins just couldn't withstand the weight of fuel drums. With the conveyor system permanently out of commission, the heaviest items in the place, the fully loaded 55-gallon barrels of gasoline, were moved by human power. Slave power. The look-see was fruitless. Trader saw no opportunities for escape. He did have a strong sense of the refinery's impending total collapse. Roof, walls, everything finally vibrating apart and ending up in a heap and cloud of dust. Not that he figured to live long enough to see it. Like the rest of his crew, he sat with his back against the refinery's interior wall, with his butt on the cold concrete. The Baron had separated him from the others and chained him by the neck to a heavy steel I-beam. The crew members were connected to one another by a long chain that passed through their ankle restraints. In front of them was a stainless steel tank 10 feet high and 15 feet long. Its entire surface, except for the ends, was blackened with soot. The tank had been turned so it rested horizontally, and the large pins at either end were attached to a series of gears, which were driven by a gas engine and allowed the huge tank to be rotated. It was rotating now at slow speed, one revolution every 30 seconds or so.
I'm sorry it's come to this, Wiseheart.
Wiseheart was a balding, bearded man who'd ridden with Trader for 3 years, working as a mechanic, driver, gunner, a jack of all trades. Rumor had it that Wiseheart had 3 or 4 wives spread out over the breadth of Deathlands, and a passel of kids who were going to inherit his stocky frame, wide nose, and evil sense of humor. Short of a miracle, it looked like Wiseheart had sired his last. Under the belly of the elevated tank and running its full length was a row of gas burners, and from the row of burners, a wall of blue flame leapt up a good 4 feet. Baron Zeal teetered over to where Trader sat.
Normally, I would gradually decrease the tank's rotational speed and increase the height of the flame to keep his feet hard to it. In this case, however, I don't have the time to waste. Stop the tank and drop the flame! Let's see if your man's time in the drum has loosened his tongue. Where are the wags booby-trapped? How do we disarm them? Tell me now and I'll let you out. I think we finally cracked your precious code. Shabazz, get the damn door open so we can hear what he's got to say.
Sure thing, Baron.
Smoke and steam rushed out, as did the sweet, unmistakable smell of roasted flesh, which cut through the refinery's petrochemical fog like a knife blade. Wiseheart's face was a crimson color, the fringe of hair above his ears drenched in sweat.
Well, what do you have to say about the code? I promise I'll stop if you tell me. So let's hear it.
I said, fuck you, sir. Fuck you very much. And can I go around again?
Back in the drum with him! Turn on the heat! Turn it up to full! Like I said, I usually stretch the whole process out, varying the speed of rotation and the temperature. I find that I get the best results over a 3 to 4 day period. I do believe you've already seen some of my finest work.
You sick fuck.
Yeah, I stumbled onto it, really. Just playing around here in the refinery. I learned that after a certain number of hours of intermittent slow roasting, the muscles of the human face lock up permanently. The end product makes a most unusual and striking decoration, don't you think?
The heads on the wall.
Exactly. Maybe your good companion will join the rest. He may not be the prettiest on the wall, but he will be a good reminder to anyone else who tries to cut a hard bargain. Turn off the jets! What do you think, traitor? Medium or well done? My bet's on medium. He seemed a little solid. Open it up!
Dense clouds of rank smoke poured out the doorway. Smoke from burnt hair, clothing, skin, all mixed together. The bosses reached into the opening with pairs of long-handled iron tongs, and with considerable effort pulled out the smoking body and dumped it unceremoniously on the concrete floor. The eyeballs were cooked dead white, like a poached trout's. Half the face had been scorched off, right down to the red skull bone. Every member of Traitor's crew rose to his or her feet and began to clap their hands. Applause for the dead man's courage. He had kept to the creed. Never give up a single thing. The display of respect and defiance hit Zeal hard.
You! The black woman! You're next!
No, take me! Take me!
No! Over here! I'm a for it!
Oh, right here, buddy! I call second!
Yeah, hers have probably been rolled less, too!
I'll cook all of you! I'll melt you down to tallow and make candles out of you! I'll burn every one of you insolent bastards twice!
Shabazz put a hand on Zeal's shoulder, then leaned close and whispered something in his ear. The Baron stiffened. He stopped waving his arms, and he closed his open mouth. Shabazz whispered some more. From the ugly look in his face, there was something mean. After a moment of one-sided discussion, Zeal seemed to get himself under control. When he turned and stared at Shabazz, the pirate trader nodded, a sly smile spreading over his hairy mug.
Sorry you had to see that. All right, traitor, you've made your point. None of your crew will talk, even if I roast every one of them for a week. If there's no way to disable the mines, then we can't use your wags. Bottom line is, we need your wags. Shabazz and me are ready to do business with you.
Traitor took the measure of Zeal's face. What had made him change his mind about killing them all? What could Shabazz have told him? Under the smeared blue and purple war paint, the clotted black mascara, there was an evil luster to the man's eyes. Whatever it was nothing but trouble, Traitor was sure. From the frying pan into the fire, that kind of trouble.